This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Buffalo. And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Hour number two on a Friday. And set to join us now is the Bills long snapper. You want to know about people that do a lot of stuff in the offseason. You always wonder, how full is a to-do list for an NFL player? This guy's got a long list. He's starting a podcast with his brother who also plays in the NFL. He's a new dad, so that alone is enough. But this is an instance of where we are in this pandemic. I asked him, hey, are you down in Georgia? Which I believe is where he still spends his off seasons. He's like, no, I'm here in Orchard Park. I'm working out at the facility. We don't see anybody.
Right.
We can't see anybody here at One Bills Drive. So he's on the other side of the wall,
yeah,
like 5 days a week.
We can't
we don't even know it.
We can't even go out and touch elbows with him. Hey, man, good to see you.
But it's long snapper Reed Ferguson joining us. First of all, congratulations, Reed, on fatherhood. It's a wonderful time, as you're probably experiencing each and every day. So congrats on that and the new baby girl to you and your wife. That's great. And, you know, the new podcast is underway. So you're keeping busy, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and thanks for the congratulations there. It's been definitely been a whirlwind. A little bit for almost coming up on a month now since little baby Blakely was born about a week and a half early. So it's been good. It's been a great learning experience. Mama's crushing it, and it's going well. Blake and I started a podcast. We just put out our second episode yesterday. We're going to be doing it weekly for now. So it's called After the Snap, Tales from Two Brothers Who Live Life Upside Down. We're going to be covering a pretty wide range of topics, a lot of stuff that has to do with our personal lives in and out of the locker room. We had two guests on. It was both of the snappers that were drafted over last weekend, oddly enough, was a record setting performance by them, it's been fun. Hopefully it blossoms into
now
something big.
My first question is your daughter's name an homage to your brother? And that's question one. And then question two. Speaking of names, I believe one of those long snappers that was drafted is they got to put him on the all name team somewhere. Isn't his name Cameron Cheeseman?
That's correct. Cameron Cheeseman. I think he was drafted to Washington. But yes, going back to your first question, my wife's original due date was a day after my brother's birthday. So we wanted to keep the family name in the running, so we went Blake to Blakely.
Very
she
nice.
Was born, like I said, she was born a little early, but we still wanted to keep the family name.
Cool. He must have been touched. I mean,
right.
Did he know that? Did he know that was coming up, or was that a surprise to him?
We kept it a surprise till pretty late. But we asked him to, you know, if he'd be the godfather to her and everything. So we kind of told him all at once, but He was thrilled, to say the least.
That's awesome. What's the dynamic like between? I mean, it's one thing to have a brother who plays in the league. It's a little bit different to have a brother who plays in the division with, you know, a historic rival of the team you're playing for. You see him twice a year. it's got to be, you know, you got to circle those games right away. And I know you guys are, you know, obviously very close, but come on, there's got to be a little bit of smack talk around the Thanksgiving table, right? I mean,
of course there is. And I and after last season, I'm 2-0 in the Ferguson Bowl as far as I'm concerned. So
Ferguson Bowl.
Do you have a Ferguson Bowl?
He hears plenty of it. Hears plenty of it from me.
Yeah. Do you have a Ferguson Bowl? Is there like a
physical piece of hardware,
like the old brown jug or the axe game?
No, but I'm gonna have to get like a belt made or something. And
yeah,
we bring it to every game.
Yeah, so you gotta do something. You gotta have something engraved every year, like the winner of the game and everything. I gotta tell you though, Reed, the people I'm happiest for are your poor parents who travel to game after game after game over the years.
That's exactly
and
right.
Split between when Blake was still in college, right? They split their time Saturdays and Sundays between you and him going to all those games.
Yep.
You couldn't ask for a better arrangement having two sons who play in a division, because that makes for two very easy Sundays every year.
Absolutely. And when the schedule came out last year, you know, that it was before, obviously, we didn't know that fans would be able to go to a lot of the games. My dad, we kind of sat down with my dad, because he's the one who plans all the flights and stuff, and said, you know, all right, so here's both schedules. I've matched them up. And because we had so many primetime games last year, that made it a step easier. So he had, you know, like you said, that's two Sundays that they don't have to worry about, because we're both playing each other. And then the primetime games they could get, you know, if it's a Thursday or a Sunday night or a Monday night or whatever, they could get to our game, and then get also to wherever he was playing that same week. So I think there was maybe like four or five complications that they maybe would have had to split up, but it ended up being a little bit of a non-issue because they couldn't travel up here to any games. Right. But I think they made most of his games down in Miami, because they had like, I don't know, 20% or whatever.
Right.
But
they had fans.
But yeah, I mean, like you said, his whole college career, they went down to Baton Rouge every Saturday, and then, you know, flew to wherever we were playing on Sunday. So yeah. They're grinding.
Let me ask you this. Did Blake come to your playoff games?
Yes.
That had to be especially delicious.
Yeah. He came to the first one, not the second one.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Andy, I believe. Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome. With respect to the podcast, Reed, should we anticipate any discussion at all on soccer? Because I know you're a huge Chelsea fan, and back when I was still allowed to jump in the locker room, we would go back and forth all the time. They're obviously in the Champions League final, which is very exciting. I will be rooting for them because I hate Manchester City. What do you think their chances are, number one? And then number two, will there ever be any pro soccer talk on your podcast? And is Blake a follower of any team?
Yeah, Blake is a Chelsea fan himself, and we also both follow Atlanta's MLS team as well, just because that's the hometown team. But yeah, we talk. Just because it's baseball season, we covered a couple baseball things on this week's episode. But there will definitely be some soccer chatter on the podcast, and I feel pretty good about Chelsea's chances in the final. I think it's at the end of the month here in a couple of weeks. But,
yep.
I mean, they beat City maybe 2 weeks ago. And then they play them, I think, this weekend. And then but I mean, you look at who they've beaten on the way to get to the final. I mean, they beat Porto, who's no slouch over two legs. They beat Atletico Madrid, who's top of the Spanish league, and then Real Madrid over two legs.
Yeah.
Who's second in the Spanish league. And obviously, I think if not for Manchester United, I think Real and Barca are top three richest clubs in the world. So, I mean, if you're talking about, a resume, that's a pretty strong resume.
Right. And the only time that Man City beat Chelsea this year in league play was before you guys got your new coach, Thomas Tuchel.
Correct.
So, yeah, that should be very, very interesting. I don't want to – Steve's eyes are glazing over, so yeah, we should probably get back to American football here.
Yeah, start speaking
no
English.
Problem.
Start switch back to English for a minute. I was going to ask you this, and it came across our feedback from on social media. People are asking, do you remember, are there specific snaps in your career? Because you had like a couple of hundred snaps over the course of your career, field goals and punts. Is there? Do you remember the bad ones, or do you just, or they all kind of blend together?
I think at this point, I would say most of them just kind of blend together. But there's definitely a couple that stand out. The Titans game winner at home a couple years ago. This past season, the punt and the punt that made Bojo eligible for league leading statistics, because it really went all the way to the last game.
Right.
So we were kind of keeping track on that to make sure he could get over the average punts per game so he could qualify. And then the snap for Tyler, I think it was PAT, where he broke the points record. There's a handful that stick out, and then there's a handful, obviously, that I wish I could have back and looking back on them. But thankfully, those bad snaps didn't cause any trouble or anything like that. But that one they're showing on the screen right now definitely sticks out as well, because I think I was going berserk after I saw where the ref spotted that ball.
That was the best coffin corner punt I've ever witnessed.
We were calling that game, and you could see it even from where I was. The ball, popped right outside the pylon, left a mark. It was just it was absolutely a perfect punt that you know, the only way it could have been more perfect is if it was longer, but he hit that thing absolutely dead on. And you just kind of, what are you going to do? You just got to shrug your shoulder. You can't catch it, And
I try to, on punts like that, I try to get downfield as fast as I can. And if I know it's going out to the sideline, I usually try to get in the ref's ear a little bit and point with my toe or my finger like, hey, let's give us an extra yard here. But literally on that play, you couldn't have pinned him down any better.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I used to get so heated when you chase this kick down, and they it's like they don't even care if their spot's accurate. They're just trying to get the play stopped, get the ball, and let's go, get the game going. And they could be off. They could be off by 3 yards. And to them, it's just, who cares? This drive's going to start inside the 25. Like, and for us, it was like, get it right.
Hey, I'm just going to reiterate this, because I've said this on the show, Reed, for spotting first downs and for where punts go out of bounds. I mean, I think we've got the technology these days to have some kind of an electronic eye on a track to run up and down the sideline. I mean, we've had them for garage door openers for, 25 years? We can't put it on a sideline in the $14 billion business that's the NFL? Yeah.
You got a point.
That's a great point.
We
can't put a imaginary yellow line on the field yet.
I mean,
first down.
Yeah, we can do all of that. We can superimpose.
Yeah, you
in
just
big
send
letters.
A beam across the you field can and you put a chip in
that's
the ball.
That's what I'm saying. Send it so we can see it.
Yeah, you can see. They can superimpose second and three across the field underneath the players, so you can read it while you're watching the play. But they can't spot the ball.
Yeah,
it used to drive me absolutely crazy.
Reed, there is an interesting dynamic here for you this season in that, your new punter, Matt Hawk, is a guy who your brother is very familiar with. So how much have you tapped into Blake's knowledge of what Matt likes before you've probably even really snapped to him yet?
Yeah, right when we signed Matt, I obviously reached out to my brother, and we chatted a little bit about Matt and Blake's experience with him. But he raved about him. He had a ton of great things to say about Matt. And from the first time I was able to get on the phone with him, I kind of got the same vibe. So we're super excited about getting him, welcoming him into our specialist room and starting to get work, when we all get back together. But Blake had a ton of good things to say on and off the field. He really enjoyed his rookie year spending time with Matt. So a lot of good things.
I'm kind of curious too, like if you've spoken to Matt, did he kind of chuckle like I'm going from one brother to another? I mean, that has to be kind of strange for him too, from his perspective.
I I think so. Yeah, we obviously laughed about it because, you know, when you're, you know, on that first phone call, it's kind of the elephant in the room. But yeah, I mean, it, you know, we had a good laugh about it, and I told him he's with the better brother now.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's awesome.
So what's next? What can we look forward to on the after the snap podcast? What's coming up?
Yeah, so coming up, I think we're gonna have. Like I said, we're doing weekly episodes. We had the two snappers that were drafted this week. They both gave some great insight as to kind of what their training was like leading up to the draft. But kind of over the summer, we're going to be getting some guys, some teammates, some guys that we are friends with across the league in for some interviews. I know Blake is really good friends with Herbert, the quarterback out in for the Chargers. So mm-hmm. I think we're going to have him on. I think they played together in the Senior Bowl last year together. But we're really just going to be sharing a lot of stories, kind of starting off because when we were doing a lot of our social media stuff leading up to kind of the first recording and trying to get ideas and topics that people would want to hear from us, a lot of people were interested in, you know, funniest guys in the locker room, you know, game day routines, on the field. What's your mentality like? Going into halftime for a game-winning kick, different things like that. You know, how do you change your mentality as you start the season and then you get more comfortable playing games as a team? And then you know, how does that change as you end the season and going into the playoffs and stuff like that? So I think just using our, you know, using our platform and using our experience over the past couple of years to try and share some knowledge.
All right, man. Well, listen, I don't know if you've turned your office into a full-blown studio yet, but, yeah, you get a guest, you're going to need a second mic, my friend, unless you're recording on site here at One Bills Drive. You're going to be doing what we do, doing his podcast over here. Unbelievable. Yeah. Turn it into a media mobile.
I got one last question before we let you go. I mean, I know that and I don't know how this works, and I'm really asking. You know, they have kicking balls. On game days, they have kicking balls, and – if punters, if they're like anybody else, they probably go through there and they kind of know which – there's probably a favorite kicking balls. They probably know that our kicking balls are good and, you know, whatever. When you go out on the field, a long snap, or how much control does the team and the long snapper, you in particular, have over which ball they're going to kick on any given series? I mean, how does that work with the officials and how willing are they – what kind of conversations surround that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great question and something that I have really tried to dig into over the past couple of years. So on game day, each team gets three K balls, as you mentioned, three kicking balls specific to each team. And usually it's an equipment guy. We have Austin Scobel who does it for us. He's been doing a great job for a couple of years now. But he basically gets about an hour on every game day to break in these three footballs. It's not like QB balls and you know, the receiver balls and running back balls. They get to use those all week in practice, break them in the whole nine yards, and they get to use those on game day. They're very picky about it. We're also picky, but unfortunately they changed the rules maybe 15 years ago or so to where the K balls have to be broken in and everything on game day. So our guy Austin is very knowledgeable about how Tyler and I like the footballs to feel on game day. Bojo was not too picky about it, and I'm not sure if Matt will, but you know, I'm really the one handling most of it. You know, Tyler's putting his foot on it, so it doesn't mean a ton to him. But as far as the feel of it, you know, how much it's scrubbed down with the brush, how fat it is, how long the ball is, that all makes a difference. But to answer your question, it's definitely a very technical situation on game days to get those footballs right, because it can make a difference, definitely. Yeah.
Well, Reed, listen, thanks for the time. Good luck with the After the Snap podcast, and tell your wife to have a very happy first Mother's Day. That should be very special. It always is the first one. So I hope you. I hope you're properly prepared. That's a big one for the missus. So
you know it's this Sunday definitely. Too, by the way, right, bro? I mean, you're not gonna.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. I'm already prepped.
All right. Good.
Me, I'm already prepped.
That's good. We're good luck getting some sleep, and hopefully we can see you in person sooner rather than later. Fingers crossed on some of these protocols changing before we get to training camp. All right.
Yep. Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. All take man. Care, Reed.
Thanks, Reed.
That's Reed Ferguson, proud new papa of his daughter Blakely. So congrats to him on that. That's a big offseason, man, starting a podcast. He's a new dad.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, though, Steve, you go back 15, 20 years, there's a lot of stories about those K-balls. I mean, those guys, the equipment guys used to do everything under the sun to those things, whether they'd run them in a dryer on a cold day to keep them warm and expanded so they'd fly further.
There was when the
do everything.
When Denny Green was with the when the head coach Dennis Green was with the Vikings, it's the year that their kicker didn't miss a kick all the year until the last one that cost him their
championship game.
That's when they changed the rules. Gary Anderson, it wasn't Gary Anderson, it was anyway,
it might have been.
Might have been. He worked their ball and it was like kicking. Nobody missed a kick in that building. Because of the way he doctored the ball, they were almost round. They were like rugby balls and soft and and grippy and all of that. And he didn't miss a kick all year. And when word got out, the league said, "Wait a minute,
we got to get control of this."
Yeah, so they did. They put a lid on you, and they were kicking football for a while. They were kicking footballs right out of the box, and finally, it was going sideways a little bit on them, literally, and the kickers were like going, and the league said, okay, you can have them on game day.
Yeah.
All right. So now they're to where the point they were.
Because I know a lot of the cold weather teams, they used to have their equipment guys run those.
Throw them in the dryer. Oh yeah, yeah.
Throw them in the dryer in the locker room.
That's only one step.
Warm them up.
that's only one step of a multi-layered process.
Stuffing them down.
They rub clay on them or dirt or a certain kind of dirt. They rub that on them and scrub them with a brush. They put another solution on there that takes that on. Then they rub them with a certain kind of brush. They put it in a vise to squeeze it just so at the right angle.
At the points. They put the points in the vise,
either at
right?
the points or, yeah, and or at all four panels or all four seams. All of it. And it's – oh, you may as well wear a lab coat when you go in there and watch those guys. Those
and goggles.
And goggles. They're all pouring test tubes in and out. And that's why back in the Deflategate controversy, when everybody was like going, he's not – listen, there's only one player on every team who says how the offensive game balls are going.
You just heard Reed say – quarterbacks are very particular.
Very particular.
About the balls that they want to use.
Every single one of them. So if those footballs back in the day when New England, there is no other person that gets laid at the feet of. Not Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick probably had no idea. No. He didn't care. Tom Brady had
100%.
He not only had it the way he wanted to, but there was some serious pressure on those guys to do it exactly the way he wanted them. You can imagine. You got this guy – Tom Brady telling you how to do it, you got to do it right because he's got to go out and play. That's just Tom Brady. Every quarterback is like that. That's not just Tom Brady. Jim was like that. E.J. Manuel's like that. You go down the list of every quarterback you know. Josh Rosen, Carson Palmer, Dan Fouts, all those guys. And some of them, they were ruthless in their treatment of the equipment staff if they didn't do it exactly the way they wanted to.
How come this isn't scuffed up? That was real.
And they come in and they'll handle all of them. And they'll just throw them right in the garbage. They'll be like, don't put that one in the game. They'll put that one in the game. And so they got to
– Yeah.
There is no holds barred. And that's why when Deflategate came out, I was like, he's probably not alone. Yeah. That's why you didn't hear quarterbacks going crazy over Tom Brady cheating because they were all like, oh, gosh, you're not doing that, are you?
Yeah.
Right? So, it's a thing. It's a real thing.
Yeah. Break time for us here. Good conversation with Reed. Break time for us here. When we come back, we'll get your thoughts and take more of your questions at 803-0550 from the OBL Fan Friday mailbag. That's next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And we are still taking your questions in the OBL Fan Friday mailbag, either on Twitter at One Bills Live or on the phone lines at 803-0550. Any question you might have about the team or the NFL at large, let her rip. But now, Steve, we put this off because we had phone callers, and we wanted to get to them first. But now, Steve, it is time for the latest installment of Tasker's Teammate, which, as everybody knows, is brought to you by Wegmans Meals to Go. Delicious meals delivered. Download the Wegmans app today. Steve and A. Tasker, you have been on a giant roll. I think you've got each of the last two on the first clue. Oh, James Lofton last week. Can't even remember who was prior to that.
Hold on, I'll tell you who it was. It was...
Hey, you got your list there?
James Lofton and Marvkus Patton.
Marvkus Patton, correct. That was... I was shocked by that one. You blew me away on that. Yeah, you were too.
That was a good one. I was like,
yeah, funny. All right, so here we go. Clue number one. Born in 1968, I grew up in rural farm country like Steve, as my family had a farm that I helped work with my five siblings.
John Davis.
It is not John Davis. I think we've had John Davis already, if I remember right. Because I remember he was on. Yeah, is he on your list?
No, he's not on my list, but I think you're... No,
yeah, we did have him. Write him down. Add him to your list now.
Yeah, let me get that out.
Clue number two, I was a three-sport high school star in football, basketball, and baseball, where I was a dominant left-handed pitcher.
Hold on. Dominant left-handed pitcher.
Let's see. I thought that was a very interesting clue that I uncovered in this teammate's bio. So I was like, wow. Because you don't usually, if you're a lot of guys go that route, you know, especially if they're a good pitcher.
Yeah, left-handers especially.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. We move on to clue number three. My football exploits earned me an opportunity at a smaller school program, but one that was very successful, as my team had two undefeated seasons during my time there.
Oof. We've already done... Yeah, Keith McKellar's been on. I know he won a national...
You've already done Petey Wheatstraw.
Petey Wheatstraw, Pete Metzlars. Boy, oh boy. Smaller school, undefeated...
Two undefeated seasons.
No.
Bryce Pop?
It is not Bryce Pop. That exposure helped me earn an opportunity to play in the East-West Shrine Game, which then helped me land on the NFL radar and get an NFL Combine invite. My successful pre-draft performances helped boost me into becoming a second-round draft choice of the Bills.
Oh, man. Is it Bucky Brooks?
No. It is not Bucky Brooks. He was a second-round draft pick, though.
Russ Copeland.
It is not Russell Copeland.
Second round. See, I should get these. So he's born in 68. That means he came in, I was like 6 years into my career. Maybe like 92. Al Edwards.
It is not Al Edwards. I was a teammate of Steve's for seven seasons.
Wow.
And during my off days, I would work on a farm in Batavia.
Chris Moore.
It is not Chris Moore. This is getting juicy now. I played my entire 11-year career with Buffalo, becoming one of 17 players to play 11 seasons or more for the Bills before retiring in 2001.
Wow. 2001. So 90 was his year when he came in. Oh, I'm struggling. Really struggling.
90. I'll give you a hint. 91 was his first year.
Was the same year. Okay, that was
second round draft pick.
Henry Jones was first rounder. Not John Perella.
Nope.
because he left.
I think he was the 92 draft.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, we go on to the next clue. Much like Steve, I also bought land in my home state of Minnesota for my brothers to farm before I joined them after my playing career was over.
Oh, I know who it is now. Phil Hansen.
It is Phil Hansen. Very well done, yes, Stephen A. Tasker.
Yes.
Yes. Left-handed pitcher. Did he ever tell you that?
I didn't know that. I didn't know he was a lefty.
Yeah, which maybe helped him a lot at left defensive end.
What a tremendous – yeah, he was a vastly underrated player. And, you know, the thing I remember about him, solid guy, obviously. You know, he's just one of those guys. What I remember about him most was the year that the Bills went to their third Super Bowl, we had to – that was the year of the comeback game, the greatest comeback in NFL history. And Marv said it, and because I didn't really realize it because we didn't watch that film – of that side of the ball, but Marv said that one of the key ingredients and contributions from any player on the team during that game, everybody talked about Frank and his quarterback play and all that. He said the second half that Phil Hansen put on the field in the comeback game was maybe one of the great performances by any Bill.
What, was he just stopped making every stop imaginable?
He was running plays down from behind. Key elements of the game were his, you know, were contributions from him. I'm not saying he, you know, made sacks or anything like that, but he did make one or two tackles that were drive-stopping plays for us against their offense that he made with an unbelievably extra effort. One on a screen play I remember in particular, but he's Marv in particular – mentioned Phil Hansen in the second half of the Houston game, and the greatest comeback was maybe his finest moment as a Bill.
Yeah,
finest half as a Bill, and he had a good one. He's number two all time in sacks, right?
No, Schobel passed him.
That's right, Schobel passed him. When he left, he was.
Yeah, when he finished his career here, he was second in sacks with 61.5. I want to say he still holds the record for most sacks in North Dakota State history. I didn't want to give you the school because that would have. I mean, you would have got it in a second.
I might have gotten that one, yeah.
But how about this? The guy wins back-to-back national titles at North Dakota State, which at the time was Division II.
Right.
Then comes here and goes to three straight Super Bowls. I mean, you want to talk about winning, man.
Yeah.
Holy crow.
He's still a winner. I mean, the guy's got that mentality.
Now, I'm going to tell you a funny story that I learned because I was doing this draft series on former Bills players for BuffaloBills.com, and I did Phil. And he was talking about how the draft was different then than it is now. And back then, ESPN only aired round one of the draft.
Right.
So he's sitting there in his apartment on campus watching the draft. Round one ends, and he still hasn't been picked yet. So now he's thinking to himself, well, do I hang around by the phone, you know, in case they call? Or how long should I wait? Like, because he's like, I didn't know I was going to be round two, three, four. I didn't know. And that was back when the first three rounds were day one, and then 4 through 7 was day two. So he's like, I'm only hanging around until 4:30. That was the cutoff time for him.
Right.
But the Bills called him before that. And here's an even better one. So he was still going to classes in the spring when scouts were coming in to work him out on campus.
Right. It was a much different environment back then, yeah.
So he's in class in March, and his coach would have to call the teacher in the classroom, hey, you know, the Jets are here. They got to pull him out of class. So here's the best part. Working out outside in North Dakota in March, that's not really happening.
Right.
So now you got to go to the gym. Problem is,
the gym's booked. Yeah, it's got
they got athletic events. So he told me they had to go to a local high school, Fargo North High School. He goes, I'm running short shuttles in the hallway of a high school for Doug Majewski, who's still on the scouting staff. He's like, I'm running short shuttles for him in a high school hallway.
Life's different.
Is that
man.
Unbelievable?
Life is different. No TV cameras, no nothing. And that's kind of the life. You can think about the life of a scout.
Yeah. He's like, he didn't make me run a 40. He's like, but I was running short shuttles in the hallway.
That's crazy.
It was nuts.
It was the same way. We were having this conversation before the show. Same thing happened to me. There was no. we did have a pro day. It was my junior, as my senior year, but I redshirted, so I was kind of there, and I went through the process, but I stayed in school when they redshirted me, and I came back, and there was no pro day for Northwestern Wildcats at that time.
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, I was a kid. I didn't get invited to the combine. I mean, no way. So, I would hang out and I played rugby,
right,
to stay in shape and have some structure so that I could be ready to work out if in this is what happened. A team like on a Monday, I'd say they'd call me and say, "Hey, a guy's coming in from the Broncos and wants you to work out for him tomorrow." I'm like, where? Okay. What time? Yeah. Okay, I'll be there. And the same thing was, you know, it just happened like next Thursday, a guy's coming in, you know, so you get sometimes a couple of days. Most of the time is like two.
Yeah.
So you had to be ready. So I played rugby to stay in shape for that. And that's the way it was for Phil. I mean, all these guys back then, it was just an entirely different world.
In typical Phil fashion, though, Phil's like, it was embarrassing. He's like, I had to tell the – we got to go to this high school to run these drills. He's like, I'm in the scouts' rental car. We're driving to the – he goes, it was ridiculous. Yeah. Like, when you think about how they do it now, it's like they got it on TV now, pro days.
Right. They're televising pro days.
Fargo North High School.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's how different it is. The SEC has their own network, the Big 12 network.
ACC.
Yeah. ACC network. So they televise all these pro days. And, you know, it's a see and be seen, and where these guys go in and they want to know
how much 30 years makes a difference.
Yeah. And it's the growth of the league as well.
All right. That was good. That was a good Taskers teammate. Break time for us when we return. We return to the OBL fan mailbag. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker back in a flash. We'll see you in a second. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, motoring our way through a Friday edition. And the OBL fan mailbag is back open. And we are going to see what Jack has for us on the tweet sheet. He says, looking at the way the draft played out with three offensive linemen and two defensive linemen. Who are the losers out on a roster spot to rookies? I don't think anyone expects us to cut a first, second, third, or fifth rounder. So what guys are really going to be in a fight and hard up to make the roster? Who makes the most sense to let go? As Steve said earlier in the show, there are going to be a lot of tough decisions that are going to have to be made by this coaching staff. And they're going to let the players make the decisions. So for us to, like, throw names out at you, I think would almost be foolhardy because it's going to be based largely on performance on the field.
We've got a long way to go before we know who's even going to be available to make the team. I mean, there's going to be injuries in the preseason.
Well, and that's the other thing.
Changes and all of that stuff. So I'm not even going to get into it, but you can take your go to the roster. You can make those decisions yourself, see what you think.
Yeah.
They're going to keep probably four defensive ends, four defensive tackles, maybe an extra guy at one of those spots if he's a special teams guy or a helper and, or a contributor in some way, shape, or form.
Probably nine offensive linemen.
Yeah, eight or nine offensive linemen. Probably have eight active on game day. They'll have six wideouts again this year.
Yep.
Two to three tight ends. Two running backs. Maybe three running backs with Tywan Jones. You know, you can go down and do the numbers yourself, and that's you. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. Yeah. Maybe not all these draft picks do make it. Maybe there are some guys who you know that are near and dear to us that aren't going to be here. Who knows? But the one break they do get in their rosters defensively, they only play two linebackers.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll probably only keep four active.
Yeah, and that depending on how many you use on special teams.
That's right, and that gives you some – well, and that's where Bam Johnson comes into play. You can keep defensive linemen if they can play. Justin Zimmer's got speed to play special teams. So you don't really need to keep that many linebackers. That gives you more space at defensive back and defensive line. So most teams will keep 22 to 23 defensive players and 25 to 26 offensive players and three specialists and wherever that however that works out. And then you've got those extra one or two spots to play with. So we'll see.
Max says, chances in a percentage that we win the AFC and represent them in the Super Bowl, in your opinion, and chances that Josh wins MVP if he's healthy for all 17 games. Apparently this... Can he check a sports book for this?
He's asking us.
Yeah.
Asking us
what
to
are the chances,
percentage-wise,
that the Bills win the AFC and represent the conference in the Super Bowl? That Josh wins MVP and is healthy for all 17 games? If he's healthy for all 17.
It's 1-16 for the conference, and it's 1-16.
Well, it's probably a little better than that. There are some teams that are
also
ran. You
got to like his chances better than other guys, of course, in the rookies and all that. But you got to, I mean, that's like trying to pick all 32 spots in the draft. You just can't do it.
Right. You want to whittle it down.
I will say this definitively. This Bills team is going to be really good offensively again this year. They're going to be a handful. I don't know if they're going to score 30 points a game or 29 and a half like they did last year. But they're going to be good. They're going to be really good. And barring a rash of injuries and all of that, and, you know, they're going to be in the conversation when it gets down close. So, I don't know what percentage you put that on, but, you know, the New England Patriots are going to be a markedly better team this year, which means what? You're going to split with them? Miami's going to be a markedly better team this year. You gonna split with them, the Jets and a rookie quarterback. I think you got to sweep those guys.
Yeah,
that's 4-2 in the division. Is that gonna be good enough?
We'll see.
It depends on what Miami does against New England.
Yeah,
and what the Jets do against
Miami,
those two.
Bills have owned Miami.
Yeah, they have.
Been a couple close games, but those close games were when the Bills didn't have Tremaine Edmonds or Matt Milano, and
Josh has lumped those guys up. For whatever reason,
I'm not saying
it's going to happen for his entire career. But up to this point, the Dolphins got to be looking at Buffalo going, oof.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Break time for us when we return. It's the Bills' third-round draft selection coming your way as he will be joining us. One Spencer Brown, the pride of Northern Iowa, joins us next here on One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.